Hi, I'm Dave O'Neill.
I'm Kitty Flanagan, and we're from the Sweet and Salty Roundabout, also known as
The Junkies. So please tune in. If you're listening to Ingridopedia with Ben and Emily, you'll probably like our show.
Yeah.
We do. We talk about lollies, chips, chocolate.
Yeah. They probably talk about better food than we do. They've a better got some, class of food.
They've got some great episodes here. I've just been having a bit of a listen. Very good. In fact, I'm going to steal some of the ideas. Anyway, whatever.
If you need a sugary break, switch over to The Junkies.
The Junkies, where you find all your podcasts.
And I know you like to bring the podcast into disrepute by talking about testicles a lot, but can I just ask you not to do that for the plum episode for once?
Let me just, I've got to swap some facts around, but okay, sure. Hi, you're listening to Ingridopedia, Australia's plummiest food podcast.
You could have said ballsiest. Oh. I would have allowed that.
You're changing the rules at the last minute. Anyway, I'm Ben Birchall and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Emily Naismith. Hello, Em.
Hello, Ben. Today we're talking about plums. Let's get into it.
All right.
So a couple of weeks ago on our grape episode, we confirmed that I'm more Maggie Beer and you're more Simon.
Yeah.
And I like the studded leather cuff that you're wearing today, really leaning into the Simon aesthetic. Good on you.
Thank you. I was worried I couldn't pull it off.
So to add to the list of reasons why I'm more Maggie, we share a strong preference for sour flavours, like obviously verjuice. I looked up a list of the most sour foods in the world, and there's lemons, pickles, rhubarb. Love them all. But my favourite sour food, I think, is umeboshi, those little pickled Japanese plums that you get on top of your rice in Japan or inside onigiri. Have you ever had one?
I have, yes.
Mm. Okay, so they're delicious. And I love the culture of pickled things on rice in Japan.
Yeah.
Like ordering a traditional Japanese meal with rice just comes with all these tiny, colourful, delicious pickles. Don't know what any of them are. They're all delicious. And one of those things is umeboshi. So how it's made is you take Asian plums and red shiso, which is a herb which is used to colour them, and they're potted with salt under a heavy weight during the summer rainy season, and they exude a briny liquid called umezu. And when the hot days of August roll around, the umeboshi are allowed a few days to dry out in the sun, and then they're repotted with a bit of the umezu and stored for a year longer before eating. So that's from Serious Eats. And I finally tracked some down on my search through Asian grocers in Glen Waverley yesterday. And they're just not in the container that I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be in like the fridge or something, but they're just on the shelf in this little random green container with a plastic bag.
Well, I guess
with
I guess
a cable tie.
Yeah. It's pretty industrial looking. But yeah, I mean, I guess they're shelf stable because they're so like pickled.
Yeah. I did look on the shelf first, but then so hard to find, especially with a four-year-old in there and you're trying to get to the dentist because your teeth hurt and you've got to find these freaking things. But anyway, we got there. So they're piercingly sour and salty with a fleshy texture, and samurai prize them as a means of combating fatigue on the battlefield. Oh. You would like this part, Ben.
Because it's a war fact.
Because it's like war related. likely because of the welcome jolt to the senses they provided. And even today they're recommended as a morning pick-me-up, defense against aging, cure for nausea, and a remedy for hangovers.
Okay.
So I've got one to eat, and I've also made us some onigiri.
Oh, wow.
With it all through.
I feel like it's a wasted opportunity. I could have had a hangover, and here I am just, you know, fresh and not in need of any battlefield remedies.
Well, let's try it with the onigiri first, because this is my first time making them, and I didn't use the mold.
It looks pretty good.
So they're pretty rustic, I would say. So, yeah, it's got the plum through it and sesame seeds. Sometimes you can just put the plum in the middle or on top as like a big thing, but I cut it up and put it all through it like this other recipe said.
There's so many flavours going on. This is like so delicious that I'm not sure which is the plum. I've got a plummy bit now.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got some good sourness to it.
Really sour. But wait until you have the actual
Okay.
bit of the plum.
An actual big
I'll just get half so I can have some too because it's got a big pip in it.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
So oh, full
so
on.
So good.
So good.
It was, oh, it like makes your mouth water.
Yeah.
I was drooling when I was having it with my four-year-old. I'm like, oh, I have a big bit. We'll both have big bits to start off with. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. It's like, but it kind of hits in such a, I don't know, there's umami in there. Like it's a whole of mouth experience.
Yeah.
At risk of sounding weird. It kind of gets all the taste buds.
Mm.
Oh, so good. I'm going to bring things back home to Australia. Thank you for that excursion to Japan. But I want to talk about Australian plums. And I want, starting off, I mean, there's a lot of varieties of plums. You mentioned that there were Asian plums that are used in umeboshi, but there's, you know, European varieties. Even just at the supermarkets in Australia and currently because they're in season, we're seeing, I bought some Queen Garnet plums yesterday. Mm. They're kind of like a darker, real juicy plum. There's apple dandies, there's Montague tree, there's red, there's black. Mm. Like there's so many different kinds of plums. I grew up with like weird, slightly hard green ones from my grandma's tree that were really only good for like sauces.
Mm.
But not only are there those plums, but there's a whole bunch of native plums. I want to talk about some Australian natives.
Cool.
Because I feel like we go overseas with our research, so I'm going to bring it back home. So the first one I want to talk about, this is from a website called Tuckerbush, is the Illawarra plum. It's also known as the Dalgal, Gungam or plum pine. Its juicy, pulpy fruits have a grape-like texture and sweetish, mild pine flavour that is enhanced by cooking. It is regarded in New South Wales as one of the best bush foods by both Aboriginal people and European colonists, and it's a common rainforest species endemic to the east coast of Australia. So that's Illawarra, starting with that one.
Yeah, cool.
Don't have any of that here.
Yes.
Don't worry, there will be things to try. The next one is the Burdekin plum, which is also known as the tulip plum, another Australian native that produces plump, acidic fruits that are only edible when ripe. Though it's a rainforest species, it's incredibly hardy and drought tolerant. And in the wild, it may also occur naturally on sand dunes, behind mangroves, and in dry subcoastal regions along the northeast coast.
Okay.
So that's Burdekin plum. I hadn't really heard of either of those two. This next one I definitely heard of, Davidson plum.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's kind of the go-to, I guess, sour plum ingredient for Australian chefs. So it's also known as Davidsonia. It can be found in tropical rainforests in Queensland and northern New South Wales, and sometimes it's known as the Mullumbimby plum. And the plums themselves are dark blue to black and 4 to 5 centimetres in diameter, and they're super sour and astringent. Probably the most memorable way I've had them was at Attica.
Uh-huh.
Ben Shuri does wallaby black pudding pikelets, Davidson plum jam and malt cream. So they're like a little...
Wow, that sounds intense.
Yeah. Yep.
But, I mean, I trust Ben.
Well,
Shuri.
You trust Ben Shuri with your life, not me. Don't trust me. And it is such a kind of go-to hipster ingredient that I have some, I don't even know what these are, vodka seltzers.
Oh, my God.
There you go. The brand is Mode. The flavour is salt brushed skin.
These look so fancy.
These are from Black Hearts and Sparrows.
I'm not going to drink this whole thing.
Okay.
I'll just have a sip.
Well, maybe I'll just open one. So this is a Davidson plum and forest berry vodka seltzer. Pretty sour, pretty astringent. Mm. I mean, I'm getting more berry than plum, if I'm honest.
Yeah. It's actually really nice and refreshing.
It
and
is, yeah.
You can taste the sourness of the Davidson plum, even though it's like second, last on the list.
There's
there's
trace amounts of Davidson plum in that hipster drink. And the last one I'm going to talk about is Kakadu plum. This information is from the Healthline website. The Kakadu plum, Terminalia ferdinandiana, also known as Gubinjay or Billy Goat plum, is a small fruit found in the eucalypt open woodlands across northern Australia. In traditional medicine, Kakadu plums were used to treat colds, the flu and headaches, and they were also utilised as an antiseptic or soothing balm for the limbs. And more recently, they've been recognised for their high nutritional value. They're a bit of a superfood.
Yeah. Are these the ones you can get, like, dried in a powder for, like, health?
Yeah. Yeah. That's things. One of the ways I saw them for sale. I was kind of looking at getting some. I didn't get any of the dried health powder, but what I did get It's a bag of chips.
Yes.
So this is the
That's basically kettle. The health powder, I'm fairly sure.
Kettle Native Collection, Kakadu Plum and Australian Aged Cheddar.
Thank you.
What a way to sample native ingredients. Thank you, chips. Again, it's got the very, very last, the very last ingredient on this list behind paprika extract, behind cocoa powder.
Must be expensive.
Kakadu plum.
Although these essence. Are delicious. You don't need much.
I don't think I've tried
these. Oh, my God. They're so good.
Yeah. So I hope our listeners don't mind that I've used this fact as an excuse to just eat some chips and drink some vodka. But, hey, you know, let's celebrate Australia.
Okay, Ben, I want to play a word association game with you. Okay. I'm going to say a word and you have to tell me the first thing that comes into your head.
All right.
If we're on listening, you can play along too. So what is the first thing you think of when I say prunes?
I'm leaving a gap for the listeners. Juice.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the second thing? The correct answer is...
Laxative.
Yeah. Shitting yourself, I would say. Or I guess constipation, depending on where you're at in the
prune. Yeah. I was going to say laxatives. Yeah. So yeah, there's a spectrum.
There
from,
is.
From shitting yourself to constipation. Okay, great.
And the reason we're talking about prunes is obviously they're dried plums. Mm. And I mean, on face value, they're delicious. I was going to ask you, Ben, if you eat prunes, but then I realized I don't really want to. The answer. And I don't want to say too much, but I will say that I think we used to have prunes as snacks when we were kids, like one or two at a time. And I loved them because they're sweet and juicy and they're delicious. So, of course, one day I ate a whole bag. And that was a mistake for child Emily. And I've been terrified of prunes ever since.
I think that.
They're very powerful when eaten by the bag.
Okay.
Just a warning for anyone. When I worked at a supermarket, I like analysed every single thing everyone ever bought from my checkout, obviously. And
you judged them.
I, of course, created mental profiles of them spanning years. But whenever anyone bought a bag of prunes or a bottle of prune juice from me, I just pictured them shitting themselves. Like, I'm sorry, that's just what I did. So, yes, prunes have an image problem. They're not popular foods anymore. The only people I ever saw buying them were very, very old men. And there's a Reddit thread in the Ask Food Historians subreddit, which I assume you're a moderator of, that asks what explains the popularity and decline of prunes in the US. And there's heaps of comments with legitimate answers to do with us having more fresh produce now, so there's less need for dried fruit, also eating less processed food, so you don't need prunes. But that's like all logical things. And I was drawn to this comment that said from Sir Mr. Mister 3 years ago, he said, "I really love prune juice. I found that it's best to enjoy in moderation, though. I decided to make a rum punch with prune juice for a get-together I was having. People seemed to enjoy it. Maybe a bit much, though, as I only had a single bathroom. Once the party got started, the party really got started. After that, I've never been allowed to make prune punch anymore. That is why prunes and prune juice is no longer an option in our house. This probably is what happened to the US, though." So, Ben, how can we make prunes popular again? Because they are delicious, like if eaten in moderation. Mm. So firstly, let's put our advertising to brains together.
Okay, sure.
I think we need to rename them. So they'll become dried plums instead of prunes. Just get away from...
Maybe do we not even want dried in there? Do we want like...
Sun-ripened
plums.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then I think obviously we need to lean into the health food angle, which is what you were talking about with Davidson plums. Plums are obviously a good source of fiber and also vitamin A, C, K, iron, copper, B6, potassium. But to be honest, I don't think we can remove the poo energy from dried plums completely. Mm-hmm. But we can make it cooler, I think, by leaning into the gut microbiome angle.
Okay, sure.
And there was a scientific study last year that found eating prunes every day can improve the gut microbiome of postmenopausal women. So it's not nothing. And then finally, I'm thinking ambassador. Mm. but it will need to be a high paying gig because everyone's just going to picture you shooting yourself. Not you, but like whoever the ambassador is, whoever yeah. puts up their hand.
Yeah.
For the right price, I'd do it.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know how much money the prune industry has.
I mean, can we check in on Maggie Beer?
Oh. Mm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe she's too synonymous with Verjuice. She couldn't do both.
That's true. Well, I mean, we're due to email her our monthly check-ins yeah. about whether she can come on our podcast. So we'll throw it in there.
We'll run it by her. Emily, thank you for bringing prunes into evidence. I do want to talk about a fact that's moderately connected to prunes. I want to let the listeners behind the curtain a little bit into my research process.
Oh, God.
Sometimes I go straight to the Smithsonian magazine and just type in the ingredient and just see what comes up.
Yeah.
I didn't in this case, but even, you know, when you're just Googling around, you're learning about a product.
World War II plus plum.
Yeah. That's Civil War one. Plus plum.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I got them mixed up.
Yeah, well, really both bad. Of them. Yeah. So, but it, like, regardless of which way I'm going, in the early stages of research, you often come across those 10 fun facts about ingredient X. And for the most part, I read them, I move on and go straight to Smithsonian. But researching plums, I did spot this fact in one of those top 10 things about plums. And you're looking at me like you might know what this fact is because I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure I do, but go on.
Okay. When a labor shortage hit California in 1905.
Oh, I would have just glazed over that. Absolutely no.
A farmer turned to 500 monkeys to harvest the prune plums.
Oh, God.
The monkeys were organized into gangs of 50 with a human foreman. They were awesome at picking the plums but actually ended up eating all of them. Oh. Today, machines do the work without eating a single plum.
So, wait, are these like... Okay, so they're not dried yet. So there wouldn't be monkey shit everywhere.
No, no, they're not dried yet. They're just the plums that are then dried and turned into prunes or sun-dried in our new marketing speak. Like normally I just gloss over those facts, but that one I read it.
You got to pick that up.
And I desperately wanted it to be real. And the other thing with those facts is they're often like they're repeated everywhere and you can never really find the source. So I've been digging into it. I reverse Google searched it. And it was all over the internet, Sierra Harvest, Encore Fruit, Organic Plums, Cook's Info, Bountiful Baskets. Normally people who are selling plums and they're trying to get the SEO from like plum facts and all that sort of stuff. So I kept digging and digging and digging. Finally I found something a little bit more legit and not just verbatim that exact fact. It was a fact sheet, like a PDF fact sheet with an illustration and whatnot, like a school kind of fact sheet from the California Dried Plum Board.
Okay, well, board makes it sound a little bit more legit.
And they had a little more information. In 1905, California dried plum grower Martin Seeley, so we've got a name, tried to remedy a labor shortage by bringing 500 monkeys to the Santa Clara Valley from Panama to pick dried plums. So they were dried. Uh-oh. Seeley organized them into crews of 50 with a human supervisor overseeing each crew and set them to work in the fields. While the monkeys were reliable at picking fruit, they also ate every plum they picked.
Where do you even get 500? Like, I know you said Panama, but like surely that's a logistical head fuck.
There's a lot of questions, but we do. We've got a name now, Martin Seeley. We've still got the date. We've got the number of monkeys. We can sort of see where this story is coming from. You see, almost see like the kind of the map or the etymology of these facts that end up all over the internet. So I keep digging. And the next part, it seems the story itself isn't as amusing as it first seemed.
Oh.
The labor shortages were due to the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, a law that banned Chinese people from working in California.
Wait, what year did you say?
It was 1905 was the labor shortage. Okay. But that law was brought in 1882. Chinese workers were the ones that were, for the most part, working on these plum farms. Mm. There's a lot of stories about trying to bring in child labor and then child labor being banned around the turn of the century. So, it's not a happy story why there was a labor shortage.
Multiple problematic levels.
So I kept digging and digging and digging. And finally, I found something close to a real story. It was from the Gilroy Post, a local paper in California in the region that the Santa Clara Valley. And the opening line really just sank my heart. An unverifiable but charming local legend holds that one prune farmer named Martin B. Seeley lamented the rising cost of hiring farmhands to pick the Darjeeling plums at his orchard. This was a time before practical mechanized picking machines. Seeley had read about how monkeys in tropical regions had been trained to harvest coconuts and other fruit, and he reasoned that primates might just be useful for picking the plums that he dried into prunes. From Panama, he imported 500 monkeys. He split them into groups of 50, placing a human foreman in charge of each group. The monkeys scampered into the trees and did indeed nimbly pick the juicy purple fruit. But it turns out that they were hungry and they ate the entirety of Seeley's harvest as they went through his orchard.
See, surely you should just buy one monkey and just test that it worked before buying the other 499. Well,
maybe you need to buy monkeys in bulk. I haven't tried to buy a monkey for a while. So that is the closest I got. The story is fleshed out, but it is unverifiable by an actual journalist in an actual newspaper, and it's written off as a charming local legend. So the moral of the story is be careful what you read in sponsored listicles and also never resort to monkey labour.
Mm. And also, we are a legitimate journalistic podcast. Never forget that.
Never.
Ben, what did you get on your breaks when you worked at Northland?
God, it was so long ago. I used to be fond of an arancini ball from the from the Italian place, the pizza place that my friend Aaron Pepper worked at.
Pumpkin and feta stuffed?
No, just peas. There was a really good Indian place. I used to get a butter chicken.
Yeah.
You know, just a food court. Lovely. Butter chicken, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
A latte, a strong latte.
In a glass with like a wire twisted handle.
Yes.
Yeah. When I worked at Kmart, I got Turkish Delight and cans of Coke. As a 15-year-old, that's a solid choice. But when I worked at Safeway, I was drawn to the fruit because, you know, you're seeing it all the time. Obviously, I was being brainwashed into being a fresh fruit person, literally. Uh-huh. Yeah. But my favorite fruit to have on my break was something called a pluot. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
So basically, it's a cross between a plum and an apricot. They're pale purple with flecks, and they have a little bit of an apricot texture inside, but it's a plum vibe. You actually mentioned them before. Yeah, I think you said apple dandy plums, but they're actually dapple dandy plums. Oh. Now they're called. They've had a bit of a name change.
Wow. Montague tree, queen gun. I'm not seeing any pluots on the
No. You say they're dapple dandy. But they're pluots.
Oh, so they're the same.
Yeah, they're the same.
Dapple dandies are pluots.
You can get them at Coles and Woolworths. I would say it's very plum-like, but it doesn't have like the bitterness of the skin that a plum has. Okay. And maybe a bit less juicy, or this one feels rather juicy. And I think they'd be really good on a cheese platter, but I used to obviously just eat them.
Just smash them.
So I know what you're thinking, Ben. Why the name pluot? Why not plumcot, which is a better portmanteau? Well, a plumcot was already a thing. They were developed in the 1920s by a plant breeder, Luther Burbank, and they were 50% plum, 50% apricot. But then 60 years later, another guy, Floyd Zager, started growing them. But they were hard to grow and ship, so he upped the plum ratio. Mm. And so now most of them only have 25 to 40% apricot DNA, and he rebranded it as the pluot in the 90s, and here we are. So I thought it would be fun to do a taste test.
Okay.
I don't know if we should do a blind taste test or if you can just taste them knowing what they are.
Okay.
What do you reckon?
Blind. Me up. Blind okay. me up.
All right.
So I've got to tell you which is the pluot.
Yeah, which is the plum. So it's a black plum.
Okay.
And which is the apricot.
Okay. It's interesting. I was going to give you a blind taste test of Chinese sauces and see if you could pick the plum from the sweet and sour. But
that sounds delicious.
Yeah, it wasn't so delicious. It was probably just would have given you even worse diabetes, to be honest. There's a lot of sugar in those things.
Put your hand out and I'll put one in your hand.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, next.
Next. That's the apricot.
Yeah.
So it had a furry.
Yeah, texture gives it away. Mm-hmm.
So this is either pluot or black plum. That last one. Black plum.
No.
Oh.
That was the pluot, the last
That's
one.
That's a pluot. It was really juicy.
Yeah, let me try.
It was my favourite.
Mm.
But, yeah, you're right. It had less less of a kind of sour bitter.
It's so much better.
Than the plum had a bit of a sour skin.
Yep. So they're the god tier stone fruit, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay, pluot.
You're welcome, everyone. Dapple Dandy if you're looking for them in the shop.
Dapple Dandies or Pluots. Done. I'm going to go get some now. See ya. Oh, wait. I've got to talk about stuff. All right. Emily, I'm going to play you a little snatch of music. You know this?
I do know it.
Know this piece of music?
So magical.
Okay. This is, of course, Tchaikovsky's Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy from his Nutcracker Suite.
I was a very big fairy kid.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. So, yeah, you're familiar with it. The Sugar Plum Fairy, a sort of fairy godmother, dances in a dream sequence of Clara, a young girl, who is the protagonist in the narrative, where each dance represents a holiday treat.
I didn't know that. I just kind of like the idea of sugar plum fairies.
And yeah.
Play the piano. So.
Yeah. So sugar plums, they're obviously in the Nutcracker Suite. They also show up again in Clement Clark Moore's A Visit from St. Nicholas, a.k.a. It Was the Night Before Christmas,
mm-hmm.
where we hear about children dreaming about sugar plums dancing.
Okay.
So it's big in Christmas folklore and children's entertainment.
Yeah, I've never really examined it. I just imagined like fairies dressed in purple. I didn't think of it as actual food.
Mm. So you haven't
is
ever asked yourself that question?
No, I've never asked, what is a sugar plum?
Well, I'm going to answer for you. First of all, it's not a plum. Okay. No plums were harmed in the making of a sugar plum. This is from an article from a publication called Elysian. It's a type of layered sugary treat made when a seed or nut is placed in the center of a pan and sugar is layered around it, kind of similar to a jawbreaker. So you do layer after layer of
I imagined sugared almonds when you said that.
Yeah, that kind of vibe. Depending on the size of the candies, a batch could take up to a week to complete. Subsequently, sugar plums were a cherished luxury back in the 18th and 19th centuries. While the candy once had a tangible definition, sugar plums quickly morphed into an abstract concept. So it was just an idea of something sweet and good. The term was widely adopted in popular vernacular of the time, used to refer to everything sweet and wonderful in the world. And then it became understood like a symbol for all things sumptuous and saccharine, which is why Tchaikovsky appointed the sugar plum fairy as the ruler over the land of sweets. She's the physical embodiment of joy and compassion, a personification of the sugar plum.
I wonder if you can get them.
Hmm. I didn't try and buy any.
Yeah.
But, maybe we can go and find some and get our Tchaikovsky on. Okay, so what did we talk about?
I talked about the really sour Japanese plums, umeboshi. I tried to make prunes cool again. Don't know if I succeeded there. And then also dived into what a pluot is and why it's the best stone fruit.
Then I used Australian native plums as an excuse to eat chips and drink vodka. Talked about plum picking monkeys and asked the question, what is a sugar plum?
You can vote for whose facts you found the most interesting on our Instagram. We're at Ingridipedia. Thank you, everybody, for listening and all your Instagram comments. We really love reading them. See you next time.
See you later.